Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
Well, The Lodgers, out by Holly Pester, her first novel after several books of poetry, out through Assembly Press. Holly joins me on the program. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
So making the jump from poetry to a novel, is that a jump?
Is it a jump? Good question. It is a jump in terms of lots of things, actually, like attention, time, but also the lens of what you're saying. I always think about Sylvia Plath says about the difference between novels and poetry, where poetry is, you know, kind of flickering light behind the door, and the novel is all morals and money. And I think that's really interesting, that as soon as you expand from poetry, you've got to think about how you've got voices and people in the same as you do in poetry, subjects kind of bashing against each other. But in the novel, you've got to work out how people relate to each other, not only how they get in and out of a room, but also how their emotions and economies and social textures kind of rub against each other. So there was lots more to think about.
Does that include like thinking about backstory, like how they got to the point at which you're telling their story?
Yeah, backstory. How do they afford to be where they are? What's that? You know, all these little details that as soon as you start, you have to kind of draw a lens or draw a kind of perimeter around how much you think about things. But yeah, backstory. And also, I think when it's the act of composition of the each, I'm interested in the difference between the two. I always think when you're writing poetry, you've got to have the doors and windows open to the world, right? I think poetry needs to be in close connection with the noise and the traffic of thoughts and other voices and stuff going on. But when you're writing a novel, the kind of compositional attention means you've got to shut yourself away. So that's quite different as well.
So it requires more focus of you as a writer?
That's a much simpler way of saying it.
Sort of distill it. I'm just very curious because like, as a poet, it sounds like maybe your antenna are always up and kind of like taking in the world in a whole fashion where you're trying to close yourself off from it in some ways as an author for a novel.
I think that's the only way to write a novel is to be quite shut away. And then for me, the only way to write poetry is it's almost coming out, it's kind of mushrooming out of you in response to the noise of work. And, you know, I work full time, and quite a lot of writers do, lucky if you don't. And I feel, so that's another, the economy of writing a novel means having time of peace, which away from wage work, which is pretty rare. But I think poetry, I think has to happen in kind of relation or in a kind of fugitive mode from work and life and other people.
So the genesis of this novel, I'm curious, like if there was an inciting incident or a person in your life or was it drawn from your own life, like in terms of the housing situations in this book?
Yeah, the complexity of tenancy has been something that I've been really interested in. I'm interested in it from quite a political perspective. I think it's where a lot of really important political activism, housing activism is going on, the kind of the crisis of generation rent, the impossibility of living a free and peaceful, secure, stable life because of the crisis of housing in definitely in the UK, and I'm sure it's similar in Canada and kind of hyper-capitalist cities and countries. But I'm interested in it on a kind of emotional level as well. Like, what does the long-term corrosive effect of tenancy have on a subject, on one's ability to speak or enunciate or think about the future and talk about your own life, as much as it is, you know, on a material day-to-day level, it's quite interruptive and disruptive and disturbing. But I think about it long term. So I was just noticing that I'd only ever been a tenant. And I was a tenant all the way through my childhood. I was from a low-income background, and my mother was a single parent, always moving house with us because landlords would put the rent up or ask us to leave for no good reason, and we'd move a lot. And when you're a child, that doesn't really, you don't really notice what's good or bad. But in adulthood, I was thinking, oh, this, there must be some sort of slow burn on that. As a poet, I guess I'm interested in the effects of long-term, well, you know, not putting any kind of moral judgment on it, but what are the long-term effects of anything on one's kind of voice or personal expression? But then I was also the lodger of many houses in the kind of jobs I've had, where, you know, as an academic, I've often had jobs quite a long way from where I happen to be living. You can't, it's quite hard, I find, in life to make work and home match geographically. So I've lodged a lot, and I found that quite a lot of the time I was lodging with single mothers who were kind of making up the mortgage or the rent with letting out a spare room. And I remember being the daughter of a single mother who was letting out bedrooms. And while lots of my kind of peers, contemporary fiction, are writing about the kind of generation rent as an effect on millennial life and Generation Z, I wanted to kind of not think about so much like the house share or the horrible landlord in a kind of rundown house. I think other writers are doing that amazingly. I wanted to kind of return to this, a more kind of something that sounds more historical and more literary in a funny way, of like the experience of the lodger, you know, which harks back to boarding houses and literary representations of different kinds of guest homes and houses, as well as this more contemporary way that people are living within each other's spaces in variously contracted and tense and stressful ways.
So then, coming out of that, the decision to kind of tell this story in like essentially like three threads.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
That's because I don't really know how to write a novel. it's pure. It's just because I don't know what I was doing. And as I was telling the story of the one thread, which is a woman in her 30s that moves into, rents out a room in a single mother's home, family home, with her little girl. So that's quite a kind of straightforward story that I thought I was going to tell. But because I don't know how to write a novel, I couldn't really get over the narrator's voice. I was like, how does this person know what's happening? I couldn't really get over the miracle of fiction, you know, the miraculous aperture of a novel. Like, who's seeing this and who's witnessing this? Who would know how that feels? And then it became, I was writing it in second person and I wasn't really sure. And I was thinking, yes, someone's seeing this. Someone's following this woman around and witnessing all her sort of movements and awkwardnesses and insecurities and discomforts in this lady's home, and witnessing her being a lodger and all her interactions with this little girl. And I thought, well, the only person that could really know all this is the previous lodger. And I really liked that kind of accident of two people's lives that who aren't connected at all, apart from this coincidence of a similar contract, an identical tenancy, if you like. And then she just came to life. The narrator came to life. And I was like, well, where is she now? And why was she there? What's the similarities between these two women? And what are the differences? Are they the same woman, or is this a memory, or is this kind of an act of speculation or kind of an imaginative project, and it all, yeah, it all kind of built from there. I started to put her life together, and that's how you end up with two to three threads. And then I was imagining her hometown and what's happening to her now, and that's when her mother kind of came to life as well, and memories of her childhood and all her dysfunctional relationships with home.
Yeah, for the longest time, I was inferring the youth thread as like future, the written by the future lodger.
Yeah.
But the fact that the book is called The Lodgers Plural kind of had me wondering about whether I was inferring wrongly or rightly. And then also the fact that, you know, there's this mother and child in one home, and then the other thread is about, you know, an absent mother and their adult child, and you know, just how much these like interweave. And I was curious about kind of the relationships between the, I don't want to say play acting at being a mother to this child in that you lodger story, but that, you know, there's this conflict with like an absent mother. Is it called Mafa?
Yeah.
Is that how you'd read it? Like, having only read it, I'm like, how does it sound in other people's heads or in, you know, in your head?
I say Mafa. Yeah. Let me try and unpick this and explain this as best I can, as best as I understand it myself, of course, which is not to say any better than you. I think the one of the motifs of the books is mother-daughter relationships, whether they're fantastical or real and strained. I think they're always quite strained, whatever they are. Well, they're always beautifully interesting, whatever mother-daughter relationships are. And I think when you throw housing and home into the mix as well, it becomes even more kind of juicy and interesting for me as a writer anyway. So I thought about this new lodger moving in to the single woman's house, a single mother's house, with this little girl, this quite precocious, kind of fun child. And I remember, and I've experienced this as a lodger and as the child, that like any adult in the space becomes a kind of locus parenti. And it's like, you are the adult. I don't really understand why you're here in my home, but since you're here, you need to do all the things that I expect adults to do, which is to get me snacks, play the games that I want to play, generally sort my stuff out for me, get my shoes and things. And I sort of love that about children. I love that they will just kind of immediately develop an intimacy, a kind of on their terms with people who are in the home. And I was also interested in the other side of this, that the new lodger becomes quite kind of, starts to kind of act out, almost role play being a mother. And I wanted to explore this closeness to a domestic scene, that if you're the lodger in a family home, you're so close to this kind of ideal family center, but you're also very removed from it. I was just interested in this really tight adjacency to parenthood, whereas a lodger, you're almost normal. You're almost in that beautiful conventional moment, but the single mother isn't in this moment either. You know, she's kind of struggling, and she's just out of frame really all the time in the novel. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side, in the parallel narrative, you've got this kind of adult woman with this larger than life kind of estranged mother that she's sort of spying on, and she has such a strange relationship with her that she can't even bring herself to use like the terms mum or mother or any kind of affection. She's developed this whole new word for her, which is the sort of strange distortion of mother, which is to call her Moffa, and she's kind of spying on Moffa because she's obsessed with the idea that Moffa might be ill or not really coping, but really it's her that's not really coping. And this kind of obsession with Moffa is also a kind of obsession with the kind of care that was somehow missing from her childhood.
Yeah, there's an interesting kind of precarity to both their lives, the lodger with the muffa and the lodger playing mother. And I found it interesting, like one of the few times that they seem to be kind of at ease is, you know, there's the friend Ann Posey looking after
Oh, yeah.
The one lodger, and she kind of like takes over as a parental role and provides like a little bit of stability, and then the like role playing of stability with this child are kind of the only times where like that unease seems to like lessen.
That's really nice. I mean, I think the friend who comes in at one point, and I wanted something to represent what was possibly just a really nice life. The alternative to the domestic family ideal is there, and it's kind of there and available to her in the form of this really caring friend who's created a house share back in the city that the reader can kind of see and tell that this would be a really nice life and a really beautiful, like radical and available alternative to this fantasy of a family that she's not really equipped for and not going about in the right way. And I do feel that whenever I talk about the like housing crisis and generation rent, I know that there is a kind of paradigm out there that would release so many of us from what feels like this state of precarity. I mean, it's not just a kind of state of mind that needs to shift. It's that there are many things wrong in the sort of social structures and pricing of rents and homes, but I wanted Anne Posey to be this like to represent this kind of other what this way out that, you know, obviously well it isn't taken up on, but she's there. And I really like what you say about the only moments people seem not on edge is when they're acting out some sort of familial or an alternative to a familial setup.
Yeah, it's like a new relational kind of structure. Obviously, you know, the Moffat, like that relationship is strange. So it's not at ease, even though there's, you know, maybe there could be housing security along with, you know, a relational security. But that there's so much precarity in this book that like those are the only moments when that tension seems to dissipate.
Yeah, and it's in kind of little things as well, isn't it? It's like in gesture, like it's almost like physical gesture, the way someone might sit or move suddenly feels like home, but it doesn't, it's very fleeting. These moments are very kind of they kind of shimmer into focus and then out again, this kind of little, and it can be in gestures. And I am interested in that. When you live in a kind of state of housing precarity, there are these glimpses of I feel at ease, I feel safe and secure, and then it sort of dissolves quite kind of quickly. Interested in when in the kind of the subjectivity of a tenant means that you're constantly living in this state of all these kind of micro risk assessments, you know, or calculations of money and risk. Whenever you put a cup down, if you're going to spill your tea, or when you walk into a room, did your bag kind of graze against the wall? It's so embedded in you. And like, oh, I've brought my bike in through the house, I think it's going to scuff the paint, and that will be something off my deposit. And you kind of forget you're even doing it. It's so kind of continuous. Your subjectivity is so kind of reined in. And there's this constant sort of adjustment and jeopardy. I think it takes a toll on someone's grammar, even as much as their physical gestures. And, you know, then of course, the bigger things like your mental health and your bank account.
Was it intentional that both the lodgers are female in this, or at least told through the female's perspective, just because it's like there's the notion of like kind of making yourself small in the world as a woman, but also as a lodger, you're kind of making yourself small in these other spaces. So it's like doubly impacted.
Yeah, it was intentional in a way. I think the only characters really in the novel are women. There's this flatmate called Cav who never shows up until Well, but he never shows up, and she's waiting for him to show up. The narrator character, she's just arrived in this sublet, and it says there'll be Cav will arrive soon, and that's all that there's this note left on the table. And she's like, "Who's he? Like, when is Cav going to come? Is Cav a he? What even is Cav?" And it's just it's something quite simple. It's this person who's out of town, and they're going to show up soon, but it becomes this kind of obsession, like, who's Cav? Could Cav come in any second? But yeah, I think that's the only non, apart from, yes, the father figure who comes in right at the end, who I think of as the landlord, the kind of symbolism of all landlords. And I also think of him as a kind of vampire kind of figure. Like, I always remember, and I like to remind myself that Count Dracula was a landlord, and so I always think of him in this kind of vampire kind of figure that kind of appears to both of them at once. But yeah, the if you I mean, there are reasons why they're women, because I'm thinking through personal kind of experience and physical kind of physical and emotional and social experiences. But yeah, just thinking about my mother's life and how so much of her precarity and insecurity has been gendered, and how much of it can actually be linked to various housing policy. It's really interesting when you, I don't know how many writers do this, but I'm obsessed with locating in a character's life an imposition on them, or an injury, or some sort of harm, and then you can quite often track it all the way to a government policy. You can track it to the date or the person that wrote that policy, and there's lots of significant dates and policies in that kind of affect everybody in this novel, from the right to buy, which was kind of introduced by Margaret Thatcher in the 80s, and then the buy-to-let mortgages that were introduced by New Labour in 1996, and just how these legislations, how much they've, well, completely destroyed the fabric of people's lives and people's access to stable housing for generations, and the accumulation of that is quite incredible.
Yeah, is it spoiling things to say that like the mother and daughter in the one story are also lodgers? Like it turns out, what we think is the situation isn't the situation?
No, that's I don't think that's spoiling things. I think that's yeah, I'm happy that that's noticed as well. Like, yeah, it turns out that they're not the woman that's letting out her rooms and being the sort of landlady is actually herself really precarious.
Right, there's like precarity perched upon precarity.
I almost witnessed in the book, from outside of my relationship with it as the author, this, like, the most interesting characters, I think, are the two mothers, the Moffa and the single mother landlady. They're the most interesting characters, and they're the two characters we don't really see. And I think about their lives a lot, and it's almost like the narrator and the lodger are sort of taking up the space of the sort of lens of the novel in a way that I find really interesting.
Kind of the way the child demands this
Oh,
attention and space.
yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's interesting you raise that because I happened to read something you'd written for poetry school where you were talking about research and it's more interesting when you follow desire, but you said the same thing happens in writing. What you expect to say next and what you want to say will always be deferred by something. And it sounds like maybe the two mothers, the absent Moffa and the mother that's the landlady are the ones you maybe wanted to write about, but you were pulled away from them?
Yes, that's really interesting. I think I mean, the working class woman and the bohemian woman, they're who Moffa and the landlady represent, really. The working class mother and the bohemian mother are really interesting figures to me, and in this novel and in all literature, actually. But also socially, you can see how housing precarity affects these groups quite distinctly. But yeah, as a writer, it's almost like you have to, yeah, you have you the object of focus. I think this is really true in poetry. The object of focus can't be the thing you are directly writing about. Like you can't, you might as well just write what you think. This is what I think. There you go. You have to build in a process of discovery and inquiry, and that is often by deviation and almost tricking and tripping yourself up. So your writing becomes quite esoteric even to yourself. Like, so you have to keep kind of looking for and inquiring after what you really should be writing about.
Speaking of building things in, obviously this is, we're talking about, you know, housing precarity and some dark things, but this is a comic novel. How did you build in the tone of like humor?
That's just what I love. And I think about comedy a lot. My collection of poetry was called Comic Timing. And the tonality of literature that I go for is always like this comedy with edge. I'm a big fan of the novelist Muriel Spark. I find her writing just on the edge of something so deeply disturbing, but just teetering there, never quite going there, and also just this deadpan, very British, was very Scottish, this very bleak humor that I just find really compelling in its relationship to truth and authenticity. One thing I can't really handle in writing in my own voice is sentimentality, and I just find the comic tone in writing a really useful protection from that.
So in the same way that the lodgers have their guard up, you have your guard up against sentimentality.
I have my guard up. Yeah, it's almost too easy to say that humor is a defense mechanism in speech, and it's for me it's a kind of collapsing of different kinds of experience and truth and material life with emotional life into a tone. I mean, you can kind of play that out in classic humor as much as you can in more kind of surreal or absurdist humor. If you think slipping on a banana peel is an example I used to think about. Well, that's a narrative, and it's this wonderful, the slipping on the banana peel is this interruption on narrative, because the coherent narrative was walking along, and then there's this slip up which creates this a whole other mode of reality, kind of bursts out of that. And that's how I like to think about comedy. It's an effect on time and an effect on narrative. So that could be a line or a sentence or a line of poetry, or it can be the duration of someone's whole life, I think, can contain comedy. So that's that kind of draws it back, I think, to the kind of Greek idea of comedy in its relationship to tragedy as well.
Well, The Lodgers definitely plays with narrative. It's out through Assembly Press. Holly Pester, thank you very much for taking some time, and congratulations on the release of the book.
Thank you so much. Thank you.